Hey everyone, welcome to the latest edition of the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. And this week I'm joined by my colleague at FrontStretch.com, Zach Catanzaretti, as well as Tom Bowles, owner of FrontStretch.com, as we're here to break down a wild finish at Martinsville Speedway this past weekend. But before we get started, I wanted to remind you on how you can sign up for the podcast every single week. Subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on iTunes and you'll get it sent straight to your smartphone once it's published. And once you do, be sure to stop by iTunes and leave us a review, as 5-star ratings helps us out tremendously. All right, y'all, good race this weekend in Martinsville. And like always, late race drama, Zach, NASCAR shortest track. Now let's get the elephant out of the room right away. Joey Logano bumping Martin Truex Jr. out of the way in the final corner of the last lap. Zach, fair or foul?
I think it's pretty fair. I mean, obviously, it's what we come to expect on a short track. And, I mean, any time you put a short track into a playoffs, I mean, it's just what you expect. And I know for the drivers, whether you're on the good side or the bad side, I mean, it's kind of expected. And I really wasn't surprised at all to see the move. I think once we saw Logano and his Team Penske teammate Keselowski racing for the lead, I mean, we've seen teammates do those type of moves to each other before, but once it gets to that point, then I'm kind of starting to think. But, yeah, I mean, once I saw that 78 clear the 22 going into the final corner, I was shooting from the catch fence in turn 3 and 4, so I had a front row view of that, literally, and I definitely expected to work for that 78. And, I mean, I think he did it in the best way possible. I mean, we heard it from a couple people. He wasn't really a dump. I mean, for me, if the 78 just didn't save it, you know, if they ended up hitting off of turn 4 and the 78 spun all around, I think visually people would have a different idea because the 78 wasn't able to get to the line. But with how it worked out, I mean, he gave him that bump, went up the track, and, you know, the 78 came back down, and just how they hooked, it just spun the 78 sideways, and from that point on, they were just flooring it and just going for the checkered flag. And I wasn't at all surprised that Joey did it. I'm certainly not surprised by Martin's reaction from it. I mean, it doesn't, you know, you don't care about short track racing. You don't care about what you expect. I mean, you just want to be race clean. And if you have a spot in the championship for that close, I mean, he's come so close yet so far from winning a short track race. He was close in this race in the fall and in the spring, and it just hasn't come together. And yeah, if you were to flip the roles, I mean, a lot of what-ifs come out of something like this. We've heard all the discussions. But if you were to flip the roles, would Martin do it? I mean, Chevy Pollux thinks he wouldn't, but I think a lot of people think he would have done it to a certain degree. I would hope he would. I mean, how can you have something like that right in your possession, right in your front windshield, and not do something, you know? And not, I mean, you're not taking somebody out or wrecking them, but you're doing everything you can. And I respect what Joey did. I think he learned a lot from the Kenseth thing from a few years ago. From what I heard, they've already exchanged texts, and we'll see how this goes forward. But, I mean, once again, Martinsville just gives us one of those wow moments every year in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Zach had a lot of cool photos of the whole little ordeal there in the last corner. So good job shooting that, Zach.
Thank you.
And you bring up a lot of good points. Tom, I know I wasn't surprised that Logano moved him out of the way. Zach said he doesn't think anybody is. I don't think so either. However, had rules were, if they were reversed, I don't think Martin would have bumped him. Zach, Tom.
See, I'm torn on that. But I am not surprised, just like everybody else, that Joey ended up doing the bumping, because guess what? That was the only way he was going to assure himself of a championship spot, right? You know, like everybody else in the Big Three, NASCAR's Big Three, they've got a 25-point edge after Martinsville with two races to go, and with Kevin Harvick's dominance at Phoenix and the way the three of them have run this season, they're going to be very hard to catch. But Joey's in this group of four other guys that he needs to stay ahead of them in order to get that fourth spot. It's the last lap, and then Truex slides up in front of him going into the last turn. It was right there, you know, for the taking. Joey knew that if he didn't bump him, he wasn't going to win the race, and if he bumped him, he had a chance. So I look at some of the sport's greatest drivers, right, and what they have done throughout their careers. Think about Jeff Gordon bumping and running on Rusty Wallace at Bristol 20, 21 years ago. You know, we've had so many situations where Kyle Busch has knocked someone out of the way. I think it's just part of the game when it comes to racing, and I think Zach did a great job of explaining it. And I think for the fans, they reacted negatively to Joey more based on past history than positivity for Martin. I don't think this is really about Truex, even though Truex was the one that got knocked out of the way. I think fans are angry, and I'm interested to see what you guys think, because of Joey and what he's done in the past couple of years. You know, think about the contract that he had in Fontana 5 years ago that left Danny Hamlin with a broken, you know, with broken bones and unable to race for about a month. Think about what he did with Matt Kenseth a couple of years ago, where payback occurred on this very racetrack. It was Logano that was the one that got knocked out in that one, much more severely than just a little bump in the final turn. So he's had his issues with a number of drivers through the years. I think that has changed fans' perception of him, and what he did on the last lap reinforced that perception.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of those points, too. And like you mentioned, Logano has a history of this. But, that, I mean, most of that happened in bigger tracks, like Auto Club, you mentioned. Obviously, 2 mile oval. Las Vegas with Kyle Busch, 1.5 miles. He had an incident with Kevin Harvick at Pocono a couple years, well, about 10 years back now, 2.5 miles. This was the first time, really, on a short track where this, outside of the Martinsville deal a couple years ago, where Kenseth, you know, wrecked him. But, Zach, I just think this was kind of classic short track racing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I know from my perspective, right, you know, right in front of the fans, I mean, they were going absolutely nuts. Even way before that first lap, I mean, we're talking, I think it was 37 laps from the last green, from the last caution flag to the end. I mean, that was some awesome racing. I mean, yep. I couldn't believe how quick. I mean, I was so surprised that Keselowski took off like he did on that one run. I mean, just when you thought you understood the race and you understood who was the quickest and who was good on short runs, long runs, and then the two car just takes off of the lead. And I mean, then the next caution came out and Joey was back in it. Truex was catching him. And I mean, the crowd was really exploding with some creative sayings here and there. But it was excitement overall. And you know, when it came down to the final lap and just what I heard from drivers on pit road, I know we spoke to Denny about just the past, you know, what we've seen from Joey, what we've seen from Martin. And we know Denny has his pass for the 22, but he said that I have more faith that the 22 was going to hit the 78 than I did the 78 hitting the 22. And I think that really goes into kind of what we were saying about what we've seen from certain drivers and how certain guys would race. And I think one of the best points of all is just where Joey was in the points coming in. I mean, we know Truex has been in a much better position. I mean, he's not looking tremendous, but he's in a decent spot going into another 1.5 miles in Texas. I mean, that certainly goes into it. We heard all year about the big three, and they haven't been much, you know, these last month or two. And it's just really been Team Penske coming to the front. And we saw Keselowski win 3 straight races. He contended for the win this weekend. We saw Blaney get a win. And Joey, for me, has been really the weak link for them, if you can call it that. He hasn't won since way back in April or May, and that was a plate track. And we know what happened last season with Richmond, so you have to go back a couple years until you found, like, a real win from him. So I think it was a lot that was really culminating in that 22 team, and he just went for it. And you got to have balls to make that decision. You have to have a little bit of skill to do it right, and that's why I really don't have any, from a fan perspective, from watching it, I don't have that bad of feeling towards the 22.
Yeah, Zach, you see, you say, and I agree with you, we thought going into the playoffs, and even up to this round when Logano was in the playoffs and the two Penske teams were out, that he is the, I guess you could say, the worst of the Penske cars. But I'm looking at his stats, and he's very, very quietly up 24 top 10s this year, which is just 2 off of Harvick and Busch for the lead. So, you know, even though he might, you know, he's only won 2 races this year, like you said, one at Talladega back in April, he's still having a really good year, even though it's really under the radar, Tom.
Yeah, I think that one of the big surprises with Joey that people don't realize is under the old point standings, without the bonuses for the playoffs, he would be right up there inside the top 4. He's almost like an old school guy that would have in the pre-playoff era, you contended for the championship based on consistency, based on how the old system was, because he really has been up there each and every week. He just hasn't been running up front as much as the big three. But, you know, I think that there's one other thing here that you will lose, and that's, A, what has gone on with Truex during these playoffs, right? Like, as much as this is, you know, about Joey, and not necessarily about Martin, I think that what Furniture Row Racing is going through, closing up shop and being able to maintain a championship pace, is pretty impressive to begin with. And they've had to keep their confidence high now through two situations where they were basically knocked out of the way in the closing laps, should have won at least two playoff races where pit strategy, track position, or, you know, the good old bump and run has done them in. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see if they make it to Homestead, whether that fortitude will pay off, whether that a championship medal of keeping it, you know, at an even keel instead of getting really affected by all the negative stuff that's coming at them. And, you know, I thought that Truex did a good job of handling things afterwards. You know, I talked some trash and said that he won't win the damn war, you know, but at the same time, I thought that Truex really handled himself well. I thought that he wasn't coming off like a guy that was going to go punch someone in the face. He was just like, all right, that's the way you want to play it, Joey? Guess what? I got the right cards in the deck, and then we come to Homestead, and there's no way you're getting by me.
Yeah, and I think he showed his displeasure after the race, you know, going up and bumping him after the checkered flew. But yeah, Tom, you mentioned Truex, and he really has had a solid playoffs. Over the past month or so, Mike Neff, you know, my usual co-host, at least for the past 3 weeks or so, he's been really hard on the Furniture Row team, and, you know, because they are shutting down at the end of the year, and he doesn't think that they're championship caliber, I guess you would say. But I got to disagree. He should have won Richmond, should have won the Roval, arguably could have won Vegas because he had the best car. I think he led the most laps. And then this past weekend, he probably should have won as he had the fastest car late in the going. So, Zach, the team's obviously shutting down, but they're going down swinging.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised at all. I remember when the playoffs started, I mean, yeah, Neff was going on about what he expected to happen, like he says for a lot. And I'm like, I don't think it's going to change. I think the 78 team is going to, as you said, go out swinging until the end. It's been a long time since they've won. I think we have to go back to Kentucky. But you just listed off a few of the races. I mean, going back to Bristol, he was running up front. And then just throughout the playoffs, it's been very good speed. But just certain things have gotten in the way in these last couple ones with literally the final corner of some of these races. And they've been taken away in some of the most incredible fashion that we've seen in these last few years. And man, that post-race, I mean, we said he was keeping it together. I mean, it was barely. I mean, he definitely went off and said some stuff. And I have to give some credit to Parker Kligerman for us to do interviews. If you get a driver who gives you little quotes like that, and for you to bounce back and give another question and another one, he did a good job. And I was really, it was wild seeing Truex get bent out of shape like that, and I'm glad he did. I would have, we said all this about short tracks, but I mean, if you're still going to be angry, you know, if you're that close. And I absolutely think that he's the wrong guy to make mad, because he's got the good cards in the deck. He's got tremendous equipment. He's got all the experience in the world. He's the reigning champion. He knows exactly what Homestead's going to be like, and he was able to come through with it and win it last year, and that's something that Logano hasn't done. He's seen the Homestead stress before, but it's never really come through at the end. So I think if you're getting a guy on your bad side, I think the 78 is the worst guy to have, because I certainly see him going to Homestead, and I certainly see him being up front there on that last lap in Miami.
And Tom, I agree with a lot of Zach's points, and I did list off four races in the playoffs, you know, that he could have or should have won. But when you look at the tracks that really stand out for me this year, Kansas, just last week, a week and a half ago now, coming into this race, into Kansas this, you know, this past race, he had three top two finishes in a row with two wins going into Kansas, and was out till lunch during the playoffs this year. So that's a little concerning. Also, a Chicagoland where he'd won two races in a row. I know it's back in June, 4 months ago, but he wasn't really a factor there either. So this all comes down to one race, and it's on a worn-out track at Homestead Miami Speedway. So, I mean, how realistic is it? Tom, how do you feel about Truex's chances?
I still feel like they're really good, because, again, there's a 25-point gap between him and the other four guys. And while the other four guys, maybe one of them could pull off a stunning upset win, you know, we've seen some crazy things happen in Phoenix. As much as Kevin Harvick has dominated, there was that race a couple years ago where Dale Earnhardt Jr. randomly edged out Harvick. You know, when the race ended up getting cut short, there was that frantic final restart in the spring a couple of years ago that Ryan Newman ended up getting out front and winning. So there have been some weird quirks, but on the whole, you look at Kurt Busch, Clint Boyer, Al Mirola, and Chase Elliott, and they just haven't had the same speed that Martin Truex Jr. has had all year long. And 25 points, as we saw at Kansas, even though Truex ran like junk, he had enough of a cushion to make sure he could fend off those charges by guys like Ryan Blaney down the stretch at Kansas. So I absolutely think that the 78 is going to make it to Homestead, and if they get there, you're talking about a team having their last hurrah, absolutely nothing to lose. I mean, what are they going to do with the junk race car? They're going to auction it off along with everything else. So it's the last opportunity for them to just come out and just show what they're made of and show how great this accomplishment really is. I mean, when people look back at Furniture Row Racing and what they were able to do, especially in this era, we forget they're doing this again this year as a single car team. They don't even have a teammate out in Colorado, and they were able to replicate the exact same, you know, strong effort that they did, you know, 2017. Maybe not as many wins, of course, but yeah, they were still one of the top three cars all season long. And that's absolutely unreal when you think about that they're 2,000 miles away from Joe Gibbs Racing, that they're a single car team, that they have an owner that isn't even part of the Race Team Alliance. They're just their own entity, really. They're just kind of out on an island, and they're still competing at a very high level. So I think what FRR has done to this point has been really impressive. And I definitely think if the 78 makes it to Homestead, and they won there last year, didn't they? So they'll be in contention once again.
And Zach, I know we got to get you out of here, so I guess I'll end you and with this question for you. Logano's led 409 laps in the past two races between Kansas and Martinsville. Obviously, Downey this past weekend in Martinsville. Before that, in the first 31 races, he had led 391 all year. Would you say, obviously he's going to the championship race, but how do you fare his chances compared to Truex? Because, like you said, Truex has won this race before and the title.
Yeah, it's certainly very, very close. I mean, every year at Homestead, we seem to have certain expectations for drivers, but we also have some surprises as well. I mean, we go back to 2016. I didn't really expect Edwards to be as good as he was, and I definitely didn't expect Jimmy to come out with a championship, and they end up just flipping around. And every year, something seems to surprise us. And Joey Logano might be that surprise this year. I mean, as I said, he's been quote-unquote, the weak link. He's been incredibly consistent, third, I think, overall with the points this year. But I did not expect him to be in this position. I kind of had him, I forget if I had him out early or not, but I did not have him going to Homestead. I think I had him out for the round of eight. And I didn't see that winning speed. I didn't see the dominance. I didn't see the pole runs. Didn't see the stage wins. I mean, just nothing was there to really convince me that he was for real, that he was somebody who can get on a roll when it really mattered most. We saw how good Ryan Blaney was early in the year. He dominated a few races. Brad was on a roll heading into the playoffs with three straight wins. And I guess Logano's on his roll now, right when it matters most. I mean, it all depends on where you align your cards. And if it turns out at the right time in the season, I mean, you're going to be one of those contenders for the championship. And Blaney and Keselowski are out, and I did not expect that, you know, after their early speed, but now Joey's the one guy left, and he certainly can be the one who can end up winning this title. He's been in Homestead quite a few times already, and he's had some pit issues or restart issues, contact, you know, get him out of it, but, I mean, he definitely could be the surprise, but I don't know if he's going to have enough for Martin. As he said, I mean, he's going to have Martin on his heels big time. I mean, Martin's the one who's mad, not Joey. I mean, so he's the one who's going to have to be watching his mirrors. I mean, whether we're going to see through the media day and, you know, what he's going to be saying, and he's going to say, oh, I'm not going to worry about it, just another race. But nah, man, I mean, when you're running for a title and you got someone who's most likely in the final four, I mean, he has to hope Martin's in the final four, right? Because if he's not, then the 70 doesn't have nearly as much to lose. And I mean, then he could really be in trouble. But either way, you know, putting that to the side, if they just race and treat that race as just pure racers, I think the 22 is going to have quite the battle, because I'm not sure if he's really at that point yet.
Yeah, classic mind games. Well, Zach, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys.
So, Tom.
Bye, Zach.
Bye-bye.
Tom, moving right along here. Like you said, a whole bunch of the drivers, you know, there's a big cutoff after fourth. Kurt Busch 25 points behind. Chase Elliott 31 off the cutoff. Clint Bowyer 42. Eric Almirola minus 50. Would you say it's a must win for all of those final four? And out of those final four, only Kurt Busch has won, and he's won it in both of the tracks.
So I agree with you. I think it's one of those situations where I think each of those four drivers needs to win. I just don't think that they've shown the speed to be able to close in on points, especially with how the big three perform at Texas and Phoenix. And I think it's going to be difficult for any of them to actually win at those two tracks. Kurt Busch is most likely not going to be in the 41 in 2019. So he's with the lame duck operation facing similar challenges. Maybe not the same challenges in the 78, but you know, guys that know they're not going to be together next year. You've got Chase Elliott, who's been in the Camaro and shown a little bit of life during the playoffs, but that car just has not had the same speed as Ford and Toyota all year. And Bowyer and Almirola, while they've had great seasons, I don't think these are guys that you expect to win at either Texas or Phoenix. I think the best you could hope for with them are top five runs, and top five runs are just not going to cut it. And Clint in the playoffs has been a little bit disappointing. I wrote about it today for our newsletter. He's only led two laps in the entire playoffs.
Wow.
It's amazing that he's still eligible. And this was a guy that back in May, we thought, May and June, he was definitely going to be the fourth guy in the championship four. That was going to be the guy to beat for the fourth spot. He was really showing some signs of life underneath Harvick, but it just wasn't meant to be. And I think what we have seen in the playoffs this year is the value of the regular season and how those bonus points really give you a cushion that makes it difficult for anyone else to climb over you. Last year, everything was a little bit more balanced. We didn't have guys go out so far ahead like we had Harvick, Busch, and Truex this year. But you look at some of the average finishes, Harvick has one of the worst average finishes of any of the 16 guys in the playoffs, and he's cruising to the championship four. So it's almost like some of these guys can get all the mistakes out of their system. Think about how many mistakes the big three have made, and they can still waltz their way to Homestead because the other guys have so high of a hill to climb, there's just absolutely zero margin for error. And somebody like Bowyer, he spins at the tail end of Martinsville, he's done. Like, there's no coming back from it.
Yeah, Martinsville was obviously his best shot at a win, I think, in this round. And I know he said it, too, in his media availability. So it's going to be interesting. I think Texas, out of those four, the ones that can win, I think, is Kurt Busch. He's won the last two polls there. So he has a lot of speed with Stuart Haas. He's got three straight top tens at the track. I picked him to go to the Final Four before the playoffs even started. So, you know, Logano kind of took his spot. So we'll have to see that going forward. And then as for Chase Elliott, I mean, he's ran there, what, five times? He's got four top tens. And he got his first Xfinity win there, so he's ran well there in the past at Texas. Bowyer, what's he got? 1 mile and a half win in his career, and it was on fuel mileage? So you never know how that's going to go.
Well, he did win at Michigan, so...
True.
I guess you can say that, but I just think that you look at Texas last fall where it was Truex versus Harvick, right? And the way Harvick beat Truex ended up being a preview of how strong he was going to be this season. But those big three have been saving their best for this moment. And the fact that they haven't won during the playoffs, which we've made such a storyline, it's because they've shot themselves in the foot. It's not because they haven't had the speed. Kevin Harvick should have won Dover. He had the valve stem problem. Kyle Busch had track bar issues at that same racetrack. Kyle Busch has won Richmond. He won the pole for Martinsville, and then the adjustments got away from them late. Still had a top five finish. You look at Truex, he listed all the races that he could have won. Harvick could have also won at Kansas, if not for the speeding penalty. He had that race in hand. So I think that these guys have had the speed, and at some point they're going to stop making mistakes because they were the guys that were dominant all year long. And if their backs are against the wall, if they feel their backs are against the wall at a track like Texas or Phoenix, I think that they're going to do what they need to do in order to get over the hump.
Yeah, Tom, I mean, I think I think Kurt Busch or Chase Elliott, Clint Boyer, Elmer, I think they're going to have to win. But Kurt Busch is right on the edge there, you know, being 25 out. But he's got to outpoint the big three, specifically Truex and Harvick. And they're so good. So it's going to be really hard for the 41 team. But, I mean, he's a past champion, so you never know what could happen in these final two races going into Homestead. But, Tom, moving forward, Neff and I specifically have talked in the past couple weeks about the winning streaks of Denny Hamlin and Jimmy Johnson. And are they going to keep winning and extend their consecutive winning seasons? Johnson's at, what, 17? Hamlin at 12. Hamlin was really close this weekend. Won stage one. It was just his third stage win of the year. Do you think he wins any of the final three?
He came close, but I think that's as close as he's going to get.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he was so frustrated after the race. He's saying what he said on Twitter and just knowing that that could be the difference in extending the streak. But with that said, I think what makes life difficult for these guys like Boyer and Kurt Busch and Almirola is Jimmy Johnson, because you're heading to Texas, a track where he's had a lot of success. I know the 48 hasn't had a ton of speed on the mile and a half, but they're going to be throwing everything at it. You better believe he wants to extend that streak, and it's one that he feels like will be, he's certainly never going to replicate it, but it's something that is very important to him. And I think that there, and even at Homestead, you can never count out the 48 to play some kind of spoiler. And they've run better in the playoffs than people have given them credit for. He came one turn from winning the Roval, and I feel like had they won that, you just never know what would have happened. He has a handful of top tens in the postseason. Just had a lot of weird things happen to them that has ruined their days with good speed. So I think you got to watch out for the 48 in the final three races. I really do. And I think if either one of them extend it, it'll be Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, Tom, I'm not sure if either one will win. Jimmy's been out to lunch really this whole year. Hamlin's been close, but it seems like they start the race better than they end it. But they do both have something in common, especially next year. They'll both be driving purple cars, as this past weekend it was announced that Ally will be sponsoring the 48 team full-time. Tom, that's a huge deal because they lost a full-time sponsor in Lowe's, and now they're getting one in Ally, which is the what they bought out GMAC, which is a longtime sponsor of Rick Hendrick.
Yeah, that's huge. Think about how few sponsors still do every single race. And I wonder if Hendrick thought it was important to make sure the precedent was still there that you can have a sponsor that sponsors every race. Because if Hendrick goes away from that model, then I don't know if we're ever going to see that model pop up again. You look at the entire landscape right now of the Cup Series, Denny Hamlin's the only other one I can think of, right, that has a full-time sponsor. Yeah. Can you think of anyone else that just has one sponsor all 36?
Logano.
Yeah, that's true. Logano, although he still has a couple races that they sell off. But
true,
right,
Auto Trader. Smart. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's a good one. Like, that's pretty much it. And so I thought it was really important for the sport that they were able to get this deal done. Now, I don't think this is some groundbreaking sponsor that turns the tide. This makes so much sense for Hendrick. Again, GMAC, they used to be, you know, a Chevy product, basically, and connected to Hendrick in all sorts of different ways. So it's not like Walmart suddenly came in and said, hey, I want to be the sponsor of the 48 car. That would be huge news. But at the same time, it still is big for the sport to have that level of support from a company that, yes, it makes perfect sense for their bottom line since they're so heavily involved in the auto industry. But they still came around and said, all right, this makes sense for us. Despite all the numbers, NASCAR is where we want to be.
Yeah, but I got to be honest. I'm really, really surprised that it's just one sponsor the entire year. We don't see that anymore at all. Like we were just talking about how Hamlin's really the only other guy with FedEx. I listened to the NASCAR and NBC podcast last week with Steve Phelps, and he even mentioned how he thought the days of having, you know, bringing in one sponsor for a whole year was done. They're obsolete. So I was really, really surprised, but I guess it's kind of cool. I mean, you'll have the same paint scheme probably, I would imagine, for the whole year. And it brings in, a new but old company, if you're going to consider GMAC, which they bought it out. So I don't know. I mean, it's a good deal for them and for Jimmy, because Jimmy's trying to chase an eighth championship, If he does get it, it'll be with likely ally. So it'll be interesting, you know, I don't know how many years this is. I don't think they announced it, but I mean, it's an attractive get, I would say.
One of the things that I have thought of, you and I have talked about this through the years, I know I'm in the minority on this, because I don't know how NASCAR would be able to regulate it, but if NASCAR said you could only have one design on the car for all 36 races, limiting the ability for teams to have multiple sponsors, I know there would be a lot of people that would balk at that and say you're crazy. But think about how many sponsors you need now to fill up a 36-race schedule. It might reset the financial landscape where you have enough sponsors in the sport that want to be involved for one race or two races. Maybe you can spread them out and replenish the funding of some of these lower-class teams that need more money to survive. Now, maybe that's just a pipe dream. It sounds very, very difficult to enforce, but I was very, very happy to see that whole 36-race deal thing because we're not going to survive as a sport if we have a bunch of sponsors for just one or two races apiece. It's just too many races to fund over the course of the season. We need to somehow find a way to get that old model back so that, A, it's not crazy expensive to run in this sport, and B, you can actually associate a sponsor brand with a race team anymore. Or once again, because think about it. Some of these race teams have so many sponsors. How can you get brand awareness and brand understanding when Kyle Larson only is sponsored by Company X for one race out of the year? Are people going to go buy those products? Because I just don't think they're going to even remember what the sponsor is.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, I grew up, you know, watching Jimmy Johnson. So I'm always going to, and I think a lot of people are going to always associate him as the Lowe's guy. Doesn't matter who he drives for or what the color car it is or what the sponsor is. So it's definitely going to get some, you know, adjusting for all of us next year. But, you know, it is good to introduce a new sponsor into the sport. And I don't know about, I think your idea might be a pipe dream. but I guess, you know, you never know.
I feel like that, but, you know.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can't really get the genie back in the bottle, right? And out of the bottle, the whole multi-sponsor deal came out of greed in the late 90s when there was so much money to be had. And all of a sudden, you could sign all these different people for different races. But think about the iconic cars of the 80s and 90s. Think about Dale Earnhardt. Can you imagine if Dale Earnhardt was known as a Busch Beer, Jimmy John's, Outback Steakhouse, and, oh, every once in a while, Rush Truck Centers or something comes on the four-car type of guy?
Mobile One,
No. Yeah, exactly, Mobile One. That's who I was thinking of. And, like, Dale Earnhardt was a GM Goodrich guy. Before that, Wrangler for several years in the early days, before you and I were even born. And I just think that NASCAR loses something when they don't have that. You know, I just think that that's a problem. And even somebody like Chase Elliott, who's super popular, Chase Elliott is known as the driver of Indianapolis Chevrolet. Sun Energy was on his car at Martinsville last weekend. I think nobody that's a fan of Chase Elliott, very, very few, would say Chase Elliott drives the Sun Energy Chevrolet. And they wouldn't really associate the company with the driver.
Yeah, and then you also got like Hooters and Mountain Dew on that car, so... Yeah, all these teams now have three, four. I mean, even Keselowski, he's got like eight or nine different primary sponsors. I'm making that number up, but it's not that far off of what it actually is. This past weekend in Martinsville, he had a new sponsor on his car that's never, I don't think, ever sponsored a NASCAR race. So it's just kind of like making ends meet. And it's not, I mean, it's really impressive for me to think that Jimmy got a full, you know, a full-time sponsor for all 36 races. That you don't hear about that these days. But good for him. But Tom, we're moving on. It's going to be a short podcast this week. We're going to talk about Texas real quick. Who you got? We got a triple header with the Truck Series, Xfinity Series, and Cup Series. So who you got winning the races?
I think over on the Cup Series side, I'm going to start with Harvick. I think that he's had a car a mile and a half over these playoffs, but hasn't been able to put together a full race. I think he's actually going to put together a full race this weekend. And I think the 14 gets it done. I think that's going to be not a boring race, but I feel like the big three will finally realign themselves. I expect all three to finish in the top five. So that's what I think on the Cup side. On the Xfinity side, I think it's a little bit more wide open. I would like to say that Christopher Bell, who has put himself in a little bit of a bind here, you know, this is the guy that has been the guy, along with Justin Allgaier, for much of the Xfinity Series season. I think he's going to be the one that turns it around, and Xfinity regular will win, you know, at Texas and set himself up for the championship for Homestead Miami. And as far as the Truck Series at Texas, I think that we've seen a lot of quirky races for that division there. And I think that one guy that has been hiding in the background, has done that speed all year, has been Matt Crafton. And Matt Crafton somehow always finds a way. That's why he's won all those championships. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he's the one that actually gets the job done. Even though he's in a worse position to head into the championship four, he somehow locked down a spot with his first win.
That'll be interesting because he's definitely struggled this year. Starting with trucks, I'm going to go Johnny Sauter. This championship is his to lose. I was telling Zach that I could see Sauter win the next two to three truck championships. He's just in that mindset, in that zone right now. Got six wins this year. I think he'll add a seventh this weekend. Xfinity, this is a crucial race because we saw an early mistake out of Justin Allgaier on turn one of the first lap at Kansas. That is him, what, 6 points out right now behind Christopher Bell. And those are the two favorites for the title. But I'm going Daniel Hemric. This guy has to win eventually. He's could have won the last four or five races legitimately. Should have definitely won Kansas until the last restart when John Hunter Nemechek kind of schooled him and the other guys on the lead lap coming from sixth. But I think Hemric gets it done this week and punches his ticket to Miami. For Cup, I'm going to go another member of the Big Three. I'm going Truex. I was like Neff. I didn't have Truex in my final four, even going into this round. But he showed something, you know, he showed a lot of people something over the past 3 weeks or so, even, you know, disregard Kansas. But he could have won a lot of the playoff races and just things didn't go their way. But I say he gets back into victory lane, a place he's never won at, perhaps. So Tom, any final words before we sign off?
Do you think that Hemric's a little bit like Jimmy Johnson was in the Busch Series before he came up to Cup?
I think,
you know what I mean? Like, where Jimmy Johnson never was that dominant, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to have the Cup career Jimmy Johnson did, but I think it's more like Jamie McMurray. Jamie McMurray didn't win his first Cup race until after... I mean, he won, you know, in his second race out for Chip Ganassi in the 40 at Charlotte, but he never won an Xfinity race before that. However, that was in October, I believe, when he won the Charlotte Cup race, and then he won two of the final three or four Xfinity races that year. So, if that were to stay true for Hemric, he'd have to get going with the wins, because there's only three races left.
Yeah. Hey, that guy, oh my God, the luck that he has had.
any final thoughts, Tom?
I think we're ready to wrap.
Cool. Well, that wraps up this week's Front Stretch Podcast. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. And until next week's show, where we review Texas, we out.